I wonder if other people are having trouble getting on. It's 7 o'clock and it's just
It's
the
kind of
three of
late.
us. Yeah. I didn't have any trouble at all.
We didn't on this end either, so not quite sure what might be happening.
Here she comes.
Paula coming back on again here. Now it's interesting, when she first logged in, there was a red line. There you go. Well, no, wait a minute. You're still connecting here.
I'm here.
Well, I'll be darned.
I know.
We don't get to see you tonight.
I know.
Sad.
I don't. Yeah. I okay. I'm going to forget it and enjoy being able.
Okay. I have no idea why that's happening.
Mm-mm.
It all happened when I got back from Arizona. I should never have left.
Must have picked up a virus in Arizona. Well, you're not the only one, because there's nobody else here yet, which is kind of odd. So I'm going to give everybody a couple more minutes to sign in.
It is odd.
Usually there's at least 4 or 5 more people here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's just enjoy the quiet for a moment.
Hello, are you having trouble getting on tonight? Hello, Elizabeth. This is Diane. Sorry. Are you in trouble? Yeah, I'm already on, but it's only me and Jerry and Margo, and Paula can't get her picture to come up. Nobody else is on. Oh, you're not planning on getting on tonight? Okay. All right, sweetie. I'll call Margaret to see if she's trying to. Okay. All right. Sorry. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, there's Barbara.
Okay.
I called Elizabeth and she's not getting on tonight, so I thought maybe she could tell me if she was having trouble.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you doing that. Thanks, Dan.
You betcha. No, I'm calling. I'm calling Barbara, but it says she's trying to get on here.
We'll give her.
Yeah, it's forward. It sent me to her messages, though.
So. Hey, Barbara.
There she is. Hi, that was me calling. Oh, she's got her she's on mute. Well,
at least we know it's not us.
Yeah, it's not.
We don't think it is. We've just been running into, we won't say any problems, but been very few people who have signed in this evening. So we're giving everybody a couple more minutes. There's John, I think. And maybe we just have a...
there we go. Here comes some other people. Version.
Betsy just signed in.
And Kay.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Betsy.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Let's take a moment of silence just to get grounded, get centered, unflustered. And if you could set an intention for what you would like to receive tonight, even if it might be rather vague in your own mind, take a moment to do that. This evening, I would like to dot, dot, dot. And then I will ask you to do the most difficult step in that process. And that is being open to that request being answered in ways that you might not even imagine. So here's what I wish to gain from this evening's sharing. And I don't know how that's going to happen or how that's going to be answered, but I believe it will be. Maybe not at the end of this 45 minutes, maybe later tonight, maybe sleeping, maybe tomorrow. But it will be answered. It will be given to me. It is true. Ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened to you. There is no such thing as unanswered prayer. So just take that in, relax with it, soften with it. To continue on with the theme that we've been following, this would probably sound rather overly simplistic, but I'll say it anyway. There is a difference between in perception in many other ways. There's a difference between what we might call my higher self and my lower self, or my divine consciousness, my Christ consciousness, and my human consciousness. Practically all of the questions that Paul asks are questions that come from lower consciousness. Not a bad thing. But the problem is that I ask a question in lower consciousness and I expect that it's going to be answered in higher consciousness. And that's, it just doesn't work that way. It's one of the reasons why teachings like Course in Miracles, for example, don't ask a lot of questions. In fact, you know, if you were to talk directly to the guides or spirits, say, we're not here to answer your questions. We're here to feed your soul. And you've got to, if you choose to, you need to allow that to happen in ways that your mind might never understand. So it's almost like a contract we make. And if we're like Paul, we probably break it every once in a while. We say, yeah, but. And the guides are very patient about that. But you begin to recognize that they never answer a question directly the way it's been asked. Because they are working on answering your lower self question in a higher realm of understanding. And kind of what they do is they sort of diffuse your question and say, what is it you're really looking for? And if you're looking for proof that comes from your personality or ego consciousness, you know, you might as well let go of that, because whatever we prove to you today, you're going to have questions about tomorrow. It's like if I were divinely inspired in a moment or so to give you all the secret of life, the solving all of the mysteries of the universe, every question you've ever thought about asking will be answered for you. And we did that. You would be satisfied for about 5 or 10 minutes. And then without even realizing it, your mind would kick in again and you would say, yeah, but what about this? What about, it would find something or some things that are exceptions to the rule. So now I'm not suggesting that you don't ask questions. But please keep in mind, and I can certainly include myself here, that most of the questions that I ask are attempts of my my personality or my ego consciousness to kind of solve a problem and to be okay with things. And again, like I said, that's never long lasting. So just be aware of that one. It's not a bad thing. Your mind's always going to be asking questions. Mm-hmm. It's just that the mind is made never to be satisfied. If that were not true, there'd be no such thing as scientific advancement. We just would say, oh, a light bulb, that's fine. I won't have to think about anything else. That's it. Oh, okay. But see, that never happens. We're always looking for something more or something better or sometimes something different. And again, we're not making a judgment about that. We're just saying, please realize that that's the way the mind works. And whatever solutions, whatever information we might come up with is not necessarily going to satisfy the mind for very long, but it is it is going to open our souls and our hearts. That's what we're at. Stretch. So that in this moment, I have the capacity to be as filled as much as I possibly can be with the grace of unconditional love. And a few seconds from now, that capacity is going to expand a little bit more. And a little bit more, and a little bit more. And so my job, in a spiritual sense, is to keep up with that expansion and allow myself to be filled this moment, and the next moment, and the next, and the next, and the next, and never to be satisfied. The way Augustine put it so beautifully, he said, "You have made our hearts restless, and they will never rest until they rest in thee." And see what, and that's sort of an ongoing evolution. You don't just go, "Oh, I'm resting in God now. That's it. I'm done." There's always more. There's always a stretching. There's always more of an opening. How much is enough unconditional love? How much can I hold? How much can I take in?
Jerry?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that really upsets me. Maybe it goes back to when I was growing up. I didn't understand a lot of things that would happen, but I knew I couldn't ask. And today I have a voice and I know I can ask, mm-hmm. and I just hear, I don't know why I'm hearing you say, it's not that I can't ask, it's that you don't need to know or something, and I do need to understand. I really do.
The way my mind works, and I can't tell you how yours works. I found this out years ago when I used to do a lot of retreat work, weekend retreats, Friday night, all day Saturday, Sunday morning. I never realized that there was kind of a structure in my mind, but I found that there was. And what I discovered was, and again, this was my reflection, and it might not have worked for everybody, but I presumed it worked for quite a few people because they kept showing up, was that on Friday evening, what I found myself doing is setting up what I called an intellectual framework for understanding, let's say, this process of surrender or recovery from addictions, whatever it might happen to be, to set up sort of an intellectual framework that people could cognitively identify with. And then what we did coming on Saturday was we dropped the intellectual framework and opened ourselves up to a spiritual understanding. But for me, and again, this is just me, that initial intellectual understanding, that intellectual framework was a necessary component for me taking that leap off into uncharted waters. Kind of getting into what Emily Cady said in her wonderful prayer, "God, I don't know the answer, you do, show me." So when we talk about asking questions, the only distinction I was trying to make here was that realize that most of the questions begin with my intellect wanting to be satisfied. And I just need to remember most of the questions that I ask are not going to satisfy my intellect for too long. Because I'm always going to be looking for something else. I'm not saying don't ask. I'm just saying be aware that your intellect is never going to be completely satisfied, because it's not. And when I say, "God, I don't know the answer, you do," I'm not making God up here someplace and me down here someplace. I'm saying that my divine consciousness already knows the answer, but my limited consciousness does not. And so allow the answer to be revealed to me with the understanding that my awareness of this particular answer to this question that I'm seeking will probably change tomorrow or the next day or the next day, because my understanding will change. My capacity for the truth will change. That's why there's more than one book, because, so please believe me, I'm not suggesting that we don't ask questions. Just don't get frustrated when the answer changes, because it probably will.
Mm-hmm. Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much about this that there really isn't a blatant question. I mean, answer. It's not like asking what's two and two.
Right.
It's just like you just said, our perceptions change, our consciousness changes, grows, and the answer I might have had 2 years ago is not the answer today.
True, because my understanding changes, my capacity for understanding changes.
And Buddha said, we're pondering the imponderable, so maybe there is no answer. I mean, really, like, what is God? How can one even answer that?
You can be the answer. When Gandhi was asked one time, he was traveling in a train and a reporter was dogging him, and the reporter was running after the train, yelling in the window, saying, what is your message? What do you want to tell the people? And Gandhi grabbed a piece of paper and scribbled on it and threw it out the window. And the message on the piece of paper he threw out the window was that I am the message. You don't do it, you don't define it, you are it.
For most people, I wonder if that's an answer.
Well, it's not an answer that my mind's going to be comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to want more. And that's all I'm suggesting, is that just be aware that your mind, your thinking mind, is not going to be satisfied.
Right. I wonder if Paul asked the guides all these questions. I wonder if his mind is ever satisfied. I mean, he doesn't understand, so he just asked the guides, you know, what is it you're trying to say? What are you saying? He didn't understand until he asked.
And the guides, that's why the guides never answer a question too directly. In fact, we're going to come up with that right away. Let's see how this fits. I'm in the middle of page 106.
Okay.
And I'm going to read a little bit of the preceding paragraph. I have come. I'm here. And it is never the small self who can claim that. The virtue of the small self at its very best is it does not know its true authority, which is the higher self. If it did, you would have been long gone. And what we mean by this is the gift of this teaching is far more powerful than the true self in its expression has known itself through in form and field in centuries and in thousands of years. Please refine this teaching, he says. What did you just say? What the are you talking about? I can hear him saying that. Because I've said that before. What are you?
Yeah.
Please refine this teaching. What did you just say? Here's the guide's answer. The realization of the divine in manifestation, in consequence, has not been fully realized in this way for thousands of years. The poet-philosopher G.K. Chesterton years ago, was approached by one of his atheistic friends and said, "Why do you still believe in Christianity? It's been tried and found wanting." And he said, "I disagree. It has never really been tried." So for thousands of years, at least 2,000, you want to count Buddha in there, about 3,000, okay? For about 3,000 years, we've gotten the message. The message has been right out there, plain as freaking day. And we keep tripping over it because it doesn't quite satisfy my mind. And when we say in this way, we are not saying that there have not been realized beings who walk the earth. What we are teaching is embodiment through claims that have been called heretical in history and were always in truth. And the denial of the inherent divinity, which is in fact your birthright, and can only be true in a loving God in a world of truth, was debased and withheld to you from you in order for you to be complicit in the betrayal of self that you have engaged in many ways as a species. And take a breath. Jesus was crucified, essentially, because he claimed to be the Son of God. That was considered by the Jewish elders blasphemy. And it was such a horrible case of blasphemy that it was punishable by death. That's one instance. John F. Kennedy, shot dead. Martin Luther King, shot dead. Robert Kennedy, shot dead. Many beings, Gandhi, shot dead. Many beings who put themselves out there to claim the truth got blown away. And I guess what the question that they're asking us today, which is rather rhetorical, are you willing to stand up for knowing and claiming the truth of who you are? Not just in the comfort of your living room, but when you walk outside the doors. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be standing on a soapbox. But one of the practices, this is probably very overly simplistic. As soon as I get out of my car at Kroger's, Margo makes a joke, I go to Kroger's practically every day, okay? The moment I get out of my car, there's a little message that goes on in my head. I want to be the light. I am the light. Be the light. Be the light. Be the light. For whoever I happen to meet walking through that store. That's a very simple way, but a very limited way of me being an expression of the truth. I don't think anybody's going to put a bullet through my head, right? Because I'm not standing on a soapbox saying that out loud.
But if you were, you would probably have a bullet in your head.
I probably would be. But see, the thing about it is, you know, I might be saying that in the parking lot with more when I'm walking to the door. And as soon as I get to the door, I start thinking about what's on my grocery list. I've totally forgotten about being the light. Isn't that interesting? So all I'm suggesting here, and I think what they're suggesting here, is how easily we forget the truth of who we are. And how everything we're talking about on Tuesday evening or on Sunday morning or other times in our lives probably is remember. Remember and act on that remembering, that truth.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
So in that, what you just said, and actually, this is one of Paula's favorite spiritual authors, Joe Goldsmith. And I forgot the books. I have many of his books, but in one of his books, he says, that which you proclaim as a living embodiment of the one, the truth, the I am, to say that as opposed to live that, that just dissipates, or it opens up that wiggle room for you to start to doubt, am I the truth? So as opposed to, you know, saying that, because I pretty much do the same thing in terms of I collect myself and I'm going wherever I'm going is I am, or I am the light, but not actually, you know, I'm not going to say that to someone, but I know that that's a narrative that's going around in my head to get myself straight. So, but to actually just like to, hey man, you know, I am the I am? Again, Goldsmith is very clear in one of his books that that's not. We don't have to. Your truth, your knowing is showing.
Your knowing is showing.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be interesting right now. Who are you at this moment? Who do I think I am? I'm somebody sitting here in my living room, right? Contributing to a class that's taught by Jerry and or
you have an echo.
I am a divine being.
Terrible echo.
And receiving the light. Period. Well, no, there's no period. The mind puts the period there. I am a divine being shining the light and being the light. It happens to come out in words. But the words are not it either. Just take a moment to realize, I just got goosebumps. Take a moment to realize how much we love one another. For creating this space. That is so unique. And so powerful. That we have this opportunity to participate in this spaciousness that is undefinable. Goes beyond my body, goes beyond my mind, goes beyond my emotions, goes beyond all the ideas that define my existence. When we teach these things, he grows concerned. See, they already know Paul's questions before he asks them. He wants this teaching to remain convenient to his sense of self or agreement to logic. What we have taught tonight is that the claim, I have come, which is an intonation of truth, claimed as the true self, is the claim that can move a mountain. I tell you that if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can tell that mountain to get up and walk, and it will. I can't even pick up this card without using my hand. If you had the faith the size of a mustard seed, you could say to that mountain, get up and walk, and it will. As I've read the Gospels again, and books commenting on the Gospels, I've become aware that the way Jesus healed people, which is a major part of, especially the books of Matthew and Mark, which is a major part of those books, the way Jesus healed people was he did not see illness. He did not see imperfection. I see you, that wonderful line from Avatar. I see you for the perfection that you are. And my vision of you in your perfection is so powerful that it undercuts any piece, any idea, any language of imperfection. In other words, in the presence of my healing power, my healing energy, my seeing the perfection of who you are, nothing will get in the way of that. It cannot. My sense of the perfect you is so powerful that nothing imperfect can enter into that vision. It overcomes all doubt, all imperfection. That is why you are healed. It overcomes everything you might be holding on to that tells you you're sick or imperfect. I see you as whole. And my vision of seeing you as whole is so freaking powerful that it overcomes any negativity you might have been holding on to. There's no room for that, just not there anymore.
Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
May I read something real quick since it pertains to just what you were talking about with faith?
Sure.
It's from Emmett Fox. I'm doing his Around the Year with Emmett Fox. Every day he has a reading. And today's reading was how much faith is necessary. Have faith in your own faith. Have faith enough in yourself to believe that you really have enough faith to move mountains. Is this a strange idea? Probably it is for many people, yet Jesus taught it. People are constantly saying that they wish they had more faith because if they had, they could go get better results. You have to realize, however, that this attitude of mind is extremely negative. It is affirming, although indirectly, that your faith is very poor. And you know what that means. Jesus said that the very smallest amount of faith, like a grain of mustard seed, is sufficient. If you have faith enough to pray at all, you have enough faith to start with. If you had no faith, you would not be praying. End of my reading.
Thank you for that, Paul. Notice how that reading bypassed the intellect, bypassed judgment. Oh, I can't make that mountain get up and move. There must be something wrong with my faith. You can say that if you want to. But doesn't that drain me of power rather than empower me? Faith is there to empower me. What do I do in my life that empower? I know what I already do that takes power away from me. What do I do that empowers me? And that's such a wonderful line in that reading that Paula did. I wouldn't be praying at all if I didn't have faith. I would not be praying at all if I didn't have faith.
Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just having word trouble with the word. I went blank. Like believing that I can move that mouth. Oh, intellect. I'm having trouble with the word intellect. And I can't get past it. Because if I see a mountain, my intellect tells me, you can't move that mountain. I can't get past my intellect. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I'm not a faithless person. But I just don't see how I could ever move a mountain. I can't go beyond that. I don't understand it. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I'm reminded of one of my favorite scenes from one of the Star Wars movies. Luke Skywalker has landed on a planet looking for the Jedi Master, Yoda. They finally meet up with one another. And as when he landed on this planet, his X-Wing starfighter landed in a swamp. It was pretty much three quarters covered up with water. Yoda was teaching him about faith and using the energy of faith, which they call the Force, right, to actually move material objects. And he had trained Luke in this process and then suggested to Luke that he used this power of faith, this energy of the Force, to lift his starfighter off and get it out of the swamp and move it over to dry land. And Luke is willing to give it a try. And so he holds his hand out. There's a little bit of Hollywood drama here, right? Holds his hand out and concentrates, and you see the waters moving and the fighter coming up out of the swamp, and then all of a sudden goes, falls back down again. And Yoda says, move over, move aside. Holds his hand out. You can see him channeling this energy. Moves the fighter from the swamp over to dry land and puts it down. And Luke says, I don't believe it. And Yoda says, that's why you fail. Faith is another way of knowing. We know things through our five senses. We can know things through our intellect. We know things through our imagination. We can know things through our intuition, and we can also know things through faith. They are all legitimate ways of knowing. One of them isn't better than the other. But sometimes what I know intuitively might contradict what I know intellectually. They might not be the same thing. In other words, I might walk into a room of people and intuitively get the sense that I don't belong here. This is a negative atmosphere for me to be in. Now, my intellect and my five senses looks all around and say, everybody's having a really good time. There's nobody throwing things at one another. You know, everybody seems to be pretty normal here and pretty loving and pretty good interacting with one another. So what my senses are telling me is one thing. What my intuition is telling me is something else. I have a choice which one of those I'm going to follow. One's not right or wrong, but they're different. And so when I say I know things through faith, let's suppose, we go back to Paula's reading. I wouldn't be praying unless I had faith. I don't have to, I'm not talking about bypassing or throwing away my intellect. It's a marvelous tool. I'm glad I have one. I mean, I am so blessed with the kind of memory that I have. You know, I can remember crap like that coming from books and coming from movies and coming from music. And I'm, extremely blessed in that. I'm very thankful for that. I also know that my intuition and my faith are part of my process of knowing too. So let's just suppose on Tuesday evening, we sign up, suit up, sign in, right? Not to satisfy our intellect. Hmm. We know that the intellect might be addressed every once in a while, but that's not why we're here. We're here for another form or another energetic type of knowing. It's not denying the intellect. My five senses are still working. They're still a necessary piece of what we're doing here, but that's not where we're landing. We're landing someplace else. What we have taught tonight is that the claim, "I have come," which is an intonation of truth claimed as the true self, is the claim that can move a mountain. And it is fortunate that the small self, in its certainty, has never attempted to appropriate it.
Never.
It cannot be appropriated at that level. Sorcery has never been this teaching, nor will it ever be. In other words, this is not magic we're talking about. I see you. I know you for who and what you are. And I allow you to know me for who and what I am. And I am grateful for our ability to see one another in this moment. I can't explain that. I can't put that in, but it doesn't matter that I can't explain it. To claim the kingdom is to call it forth. To claim the divine in another is to call it forth. And the agreement to manifest, to know the self in realization at the cost of the old, is the claim of the heretic and the holy man. That's kind of tongue in cheek. They're often the same, you know. What heresy has been indoctrinated as is speaking against the church or the institution. You cannot claim heresy. I wish you didn't go into all this stuff, but I might as well finish this paragraph. You cannot claim heresy, in fact, as the divine self, because the divine self is God, as it knows itself in individuation. The teaching of, this is more important than the heresy part. The teaching of the Christ that you were taught has always been a teaching of embodiment and manifestation and resurrection at the cost of the old. And the upper room is where we sing and lift you to for the awakening of the world you live in. My hope, my faith, every time we gather together on a Tuesday evening, is that what we have shared, what we have absorbed, what we have taken in, even the struggles, even the little wrestling matches that might be going on, have pushed or expanded each one of us to grow a little bit more, to be a little bit more of the embodiment of light, to be a little bit more of a reflection of the truth. A little bit more and a little bit more. So that when we sign off, we press that little red button in the lower right-hand corner later on this evening. That we don't, first of all, that we don't lose our connection with one another. That we realize that each one of us has contributed to the growth of another. And then my sense and my understanding and my reflection of the resonance of the truth of who I am has been lovingly expanded. And that you can't go backwards in your spiritual growth. It's never two steps forward and one step backward. It might feel that way. But spiritual growth is always projecting and propelling in forward motion. You never go backwards.
Jerry?
Again, feel that way, but it never happens.
Jerry?
Yes.
Diane has sparked something in me here that I'd like to keep, like what I just read about, and she's talking about having enough faith to move mountains. I am wondering if in the day that all of that was written, it was written, I don't know a lot about the Bible, and I'm definitely not an expert, but to maybe a dramatization to get over a point. Of course, my intellect also says, I cannot move that mountain. But could it mean, do you have enough faith that you can handle the mountains in your life?
Mm.
That's all you need, is the faith to know you can handle your mountains.
Good for you.
I like that. That's good.
Because that could bring somebody down if they thought they only had faith if they could actually physically move a mountain.
This is a little bit tricky. First of all, I think that we can look at that as being the literal truth. If you had faith the size of a mustard seed, you could save that mountain, get up and walk. At the same time, I recall this very vaguely from my theological study of scripture years and years ago, that many of Jesus' parables were spoken in the form of metaphor rather than intellectual truth. And there was a word in Aramaic, and I can't remember what it is right now, that talked about kind of stretching things almost to absurdity so they got your attention.
Right. That's what I was trying to put it in that kind of
that's
word.
That's what I was thinking as I was listening
yeah.
to you.
Yeah.
Now, again, I need to be extremely careful about that because my mind, the way my thinking, that's just a metaphor. He didn't really mean that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on some level, he might have. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but as to reflect on what Paul is saying is, I need to work with what I've got, not what I think I ought to have.
Right. And we all do have many mountains in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about it. Yeah. In fact, Thomas Merton's autobiography was called Seven Story Mountain. And it was one of his biographers wrote a book called The Seven Mountains of Thomas Merton, which was a reflection of not necessarily overcoming, but working through. And so it might be interesting for me or for you to ask ourselves, you know, as we did in the beginning this evening, of the way one of my teachers put it, instead of saying, what's your mountain? She said, what's your growing edge?
Yes.
Where are you being called to stretch in your life, to grow, to...
Oh, I like that, Jerry.
Expand your awareness and understanding. What's your growing... I never forgot that. I remember she used to ask that a lot. What's your mm-hmm. growing edge?
Hmm.
It could be really, really simple.
Yeah.
What's your growing edge? So let's take a couple minutes to do whatever it is we need to do for the next few minutes. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. And just scooch down, get comfortable wherever you are. And just get into the rhythm of your breathing. Allow your breath to take you. Settle, soften. Relax your neck and your shoulders. Just allow those muscles to kind of hang loose for a moment. Let yourself be supported by the chair or the couch you're sitting in. Soften yourself. Physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And it might be very, very simple right now. Just ask yourself the question and let Divine Spirit answer it for you. What is my growing edge at this moment? What am I being called to heal or to release? Or to transform. And whatever the answer to that might be, let us also pray that we will be open to receiving the grace, the energy, to do that work gently, effectively, lovingly. And breathe that into your being. Let it touch every cell and fiber of you, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And then you can breathe deeply again and open your eyes when you're ready. I'm coming back to that that imagery of the mustard seed and moving the mountain.
I know, me too.
But it's not my job. It's probably not my job to move a mountain. Mm. Okay, moving my.
We probably have moved a lot of mountains in our lives. You know.
What we're being asked to do right now is don't get caught up in the drama of moving mountains.
Okay. Jerry?
Knowing that the next step might be reading the next chapter in the book, or the next step might be cleaning the toilet, and then whatever might happen. Yeah, Diane?
I just want to say quickly that you said at the beginning of the meeting, what is it you need? What is it you or might ask for tonight? And what I saw tonight was that I don't need to strengthen my intellect. I need to strengthen my faith and my spirituality.
Hmm. Okay.
That's what I got. That's what I got.
Thank you. Thanks for
realizing that.
The way Marion Williamson put it was that you don't need to know more. You already know whatever it is you need to know, right? You need to know it more deeply than know it right now.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, guys. Wonderful.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.
Hopefully, I'll have my Zoom thing worked out.
Yeah, we'd like to see your smiling face, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks,
everybody.
All right. May the force be with you. Live long and prosper.
Yes, the force. Yes.
Oh, Lordy.